Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We're continuing with Canto 10, Chapter 28. Krishna rescues Nanda Maharaj from the abode of Varuna. Text number 3, 10.8.3. And the translation reads, O King, this is Shukadev speaking to Maharaj Parikshit, O King, not seeing Nanda Maharaj, the cowherd man loudly cried out, O Krishna, O Rama. Lord Krishna heard their cries and understood that his father had been captured by Varuna. Therefore, the Almighty Lord, who makes his devotees fearless, although they were apparently feeling fear, went to the court of Varunadev. And the BBT purport reads, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that when Nanda Maharaj went to bathe in the river, he was accompanied by several cowherd men. When Nanda did not come out of the water, they began to cry out, and Krishna immediately came there. Understanding the situation, Sri Krishna entered the water and went to the court of the demigod Varuna, determined to free his father and the other cowherd men from fear of a mere demigod. So, Vishwanath's commentary. Other cowherd men had accompanied Nanda Maharaj as guards when he went to take his bath at night. Though Krishna was sleeping on his bed of flowers far off, because Nandagram and River Jamuna are very far from one another, he heard the cowherd man shouting, Krishna! Rama! The word upa shrutya, upa means what? Like Upanishad, near. Shrutya indicates that he heard from close by. How's that? He's far, far away. Nandagram and River Jamuna are far away. Because Krishna pervades all places, and in this way, he is close to everyone. Very near. He could understand that his father had been taken by Varuna, because he's omniscient. Quickly approaching the cowherd man, he asked where his father had sunk in the water. Finding the place, he jumped from the bank into the river and approached Varuna. He is called Svanam Abhaya Da, or Svanam, that's his associates, Abhaya Da, giving fear, relieving the fear of his associates. Because later, by taking his father from Varuna and returning, he relieved the fear of his relatives. Very clear. Jiva Goswami, the cowherds who guarded Nanda on all sides began shouting. Though they shouted from far away, Krishna heard the shouts as if close. Upa Shrutya. Understanding that Nanda had been taken by Varuna, he went close to him. Since he was all-pervasive, Vibhu, he gave fearlessness to all the people of Rajwa to speak of his father. And Sanatan Goswami writes, they loudly sang, Krishna, Rama, out of great pain. Spontaneously, they just utter the names of the Lord. The name Krishna is first because they had special affection for that name, or because of its special power, or it refers to the two brothers, Krishna and Balaram. The cowherds, Gopika, had gone with Nanda to bathe, or were his guards, surrounding him on four sides. Krishna heard at close hand the shouting and how Nanda had been taken. This means that Krishna came to the place later. Because of the shouting, hearing from far off, as if it were close, Uprashrutya, he entered the water. He had been attracted by the shouting. Shukadev says, "Oh, King Parikshit, similarly, the Lord gave fearlessness when the elders shouted as the Brahmastra sent by Ashwatthama approached you." Right? Ashwatthama sent a Brahmastra. Maharaj Parikshit was in the room, in the womb. So he's saying, "Hey, Maharaj Parikshit, the same thing happened when you were in the womb of your mother. The elders shouted out. The Lord shone, Rajan, emitting effulgence because of anger, because he was the sole master of the people of Braja, Vibhu. Though he was all-pervading, Vibhu, he came there quickly out of affection. He is Bhagavan, who shows unlimited qualities such as compassion, delivering the people of the world. Though he could, by his will alone, deliver Nanda from the demon," it's Varuna, not a demon, "in order to give benefit to Varuna, by his great mercy, he entered the water on the pretext of delivering Nanda." So the demon references the associate of Varuna who was offending Krishna. By offending Nanda Maharaj, he's offending Krishna. So the word is being translated here as demon, to benefit Varuna. So by his mercy, he went on the pretext of delivering Nanda. In fact, the whole pastime is to give his association to Varuna. I mean, that's one of the features. So now we're going to read Jiva Goswami's, or from Jiva Goswami's, Gopal Champu. You remember from yesterday and previous, this pastime is retold in Gopal Champu. Gopal Champu is a text that describes Krishna's pastimes in a particular literary form called Champu. So Gopal Champu is his writing. And just on the side, he wrote a book, How to Write a Champu. What are the elements? Because it's a standard, you know, not mainstream, but it's a standard Vedic type of literary composition called Champu. So he explained how you, what are the elements that are necessary for writing a Champu. You know, the rules. You know the rules. And then he followed the rules and wrote Gopal Champu. So he continues. This is from yesterday, continuing on. What happened in Vraja should be described. When Nanda, the protector of Krishna, disappeared from the view of the people whose wealth was dependent on him, Nanda, they ran in all directions with fear and dove in the water. But not finding him, they returned to the shore. After arriving at the shore, they returned to Vraja while wailing in grief and saw Krishna, Balaram, and others who lamented in front of them. That's the elders. On hearing that most lamentable news, Krishna and Balaram's mind sprang into action. They passed all others and, moving quickly on the earth with zeal, arrived at the place on the river. Krishna embraced his brother and, with tears in his eyes, spoke to him, "O brother, keep mother free from lamentation and protect the others. Protect them as long as I cannot make them happy by bringing father back. When mother comes here, I will not have completed bringing father here." So he stayed behind. And this is a leela that's being described here that's similar to the Kaliya leela. Kaliya serpent. So when Krishna was in the coils of the Kaliya serpent and the cowherd boys were wailing and calling out, one messenger went all the way from the river Jamuna back to Nandagram. It's quite a distance. And informed Nanda and Jasoda, "Krishna," the role reversal. Normally devotees are in difficulty and Krishna comes. Now it's Krishna's in difficulty. Krishna's in difficulty. So Nanda Maharaj slapped his arms and said, "I'll go once and take care of the problem." Mother Jasoda said, "I'm going too." And Balaram told her, "Oh, Krishna's having fun." But he went to also prevent Mother Jasoda, because when Mother Jasoda saw Krishna in the coils of the Kaliya serpent, she wanted to enter the poisonous lake because she couldn't bear to see Krishna in difficulty. Balaram is stronger. He stopped her. So that's what's going to happen here. So this is Krishna speaking in this way. He went to bring back Nanda. Though a lion expands his body on destroying his enemy, Krishna put the lion to shame. Gathering up his lower cloth, he disappeared in the Jamuna into a deep hole. The moment Yashoda and the others arrived and saw Balaram alone, they looked for Krishna and asked, "Where has your younger brother gone?" Seeing that Yashoda was full of grief, he spoke, "Oh, mother, do not be grieved. He will now bring back Nanda and make everyone happy." He said to Rohini, that's his mother, "Ah, why are you beating me? Please trust me and keep Yashoda alive, since she is barely alive. As in the case of the Kaliya incident, the elders, considering that Balaram's words would cause her recovery, made her relax. However, the people began to consider, is this a dream or are we awake? Have we fainted or are we insane? They lost their intelligence completely. With agitated hearts, all they said aloud was, "Oh, Yashoda, ah, oh, Krishna, where are you?" Separation, going mad. While four women held up Yashoda, her heart began to burn. They could understand she was alive because she would still breathe. But all she said was, "Ah, ah." Gopal Champu. Krishna, dear to the gopis, entered the hole within the water and approached the abode of Runa. Please understand the condition of Krishna in that situation. To be continued tomorrow. Not tomorrow. Tomorrow is Nrisimha's appearance day, so Thursday. Pretty fantastic drama, huh? I mean, Jiva Goswami. He's known, he is especially known for his scholarship. But he wrote many different writings. I mean, some, like I mentioned, a technical one, How to Write a Champu. He wrote a book on Sanskrit grammar. And it was just following Lord Chaitanya, because when Lord Chaitanya was a young man, Brahmin, living in Navadvip, his field of teaching as a Brahmin was Sanskrit grammar. And he was like super scholar. He defeated everybody. And then he became a devotee. And then he stopped teaching the way that he taught before. Instead, he taught every rule in Sanskrit in relation to names of Krishna. And I don't know so much about how you learn Sanskrit, but I know there's lots of rules. And all the rules had a name of Krishna connected to it, so they could remember the rule by connecting it with the name of Krishna. And that's how Lord Chaitanya taught thereafter. Then Jiva Goswami, a couple generations later, came along and wrote a grammar book exactly following up Lord Chaitanya, how Lord Chaitanya taught grammar. Namkaran, so I forget the title of the book. It's all the rules in names of Krishna. How to teach Sanskrit rules, grammatical rules. And he wrote other, of course, none of it's fiction. It's just his way of, aside from super scholarly, three different commentaries on the Bhagavatam. He's awesome and prolific. But his range is also amazing. He wrote other texts that are just describing Krishna's pastimes in other ways besides Gopal Champu. So an astounding Vaishnav. And he learned everything. Well, he learned the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, specifically, from Rupa Goswami. He was his faithful disciple and student. He did so many things. So many things. Incredible. Acharya. So back to the narration. We've been saying, so repeat it again, when Krishna performs pastimes, it has multiple purposes. The grief of the residents of Vrindavan that Nanda had been taken. The grief of the residents of Vrindavan that Krishna had also disappeared. And they're unable to live, sustain their lives without Krishna's presence. So it's danger and then no danger anymore. So he's, because the Sanskrit phrase in the text, we heard it, Svanam Abhaya Da. Svanam, his own devotees, Abhaya Da, he's the giver of fearlessness to his devotees. So they were like, what to speak of fear, they were leaving their bodies. And then he relieved them by bringing Nanda back. And so that Leela was, and then Nanda comes back. And it's an intensification of their love. And he wanted to give his association to Varuna. And as this chapter concludes, we read the summary at the beginning, chapter summary. They had, from time to time, as we were mentioning this phrase, that he draws the curtain back and shows his divinity and then closes the curtain. They forget everything by Yoga Maya. They just forget everything. So they're always like, who is he? not always. There are past times where that enters, and then they start speculating. And then they refer back to what Garga Muni said. So we're going to cover, by the way, that's starting Thursday evening. We're just going to go to Canto 10, Chapter 8, starting with Garga Muni's name-giving pronunciation of Krishna's qualities, his predicting his life in 8 verses. We're going to cover that section again, because we covered it after the Govardhan Leela. So this is the Brijbasis wondering who is Krishna. So Krishna then showed them the spiritual world. I mean, something very similar happened. Not identical, but something very similar happened to Lord Brahma twice. Once we find in Canto 2, Chapter 9, the very, very, very beginning of creation. There isn't even a creation. He just hasn't done his creation work yet. But the Lord then shows him the spiritual world, the Vaikuntha realm. And then again, we saw in the Brahma Vimohan Leela, the world is created. And again, Krishna shows Brahma everything, the cosmic manifestation and himself and everything and everything. It's even more astounding than what Arjuna saw, the universal form. Brahma gets the impression of the universal form from Garbhadakshay Vishnu every night. Before he gets up in the morning, he gets this darshan of the universal form, so he knows how to recreate the universe that got dissolved during the partial devastation. If you remember that? Should I say it again? At the end of, there's the day and the night of Brahma in so many years. So, but each day, at the end of the day, before the day ends, there's something like 36,000 years of fire. Before that, it's drought. It's very logical. Drought, fire, the Garbhadak ocean rises, and up to Brahmaloka, all the planets are submerged. And Brahma is at the Brahmaloka on the top, and he's asleep. And when he's asleep, his mind is visited by Garbhadakshay Vishnu in his mind. And that there's this language that comes in the earlier canto, third canto, that they're interchangeable. Garbhadakshay Vishnu and Virat Rupa, Virat Rupa and Garbhadakshay Vishnu. Now Garbhadakshay Vishnu is a form of Vishnu. Eternal form of Vishnu. And the Virat Rupa is also used interchangeably as his form, because Garbhadakshay Vishnu is within the universe, at the bottom of the universe, in the Garbhadak ocean, or resting upon it, and the universal form rises from the Garbhadak ocean. That's what I just said, that is described in Canto 3, Chapter 26. It's really like the Bhagavatam is not composed like an encyclopedia. Like, okay, over here's this, and then over here's another bucket, and over here's another bucket, and it's not composed like that. It's, a very broad composition that it's not, sequential like that. There are portions that are sequential, but you have to become familiar with the big picture in order to get the big picture. So the Virat Rupa rises from the Garbhadak ocean, and it's a form of Garbhadaksha Vishnu. There must be some language like it's within the universal form, is within the form of Garbhadaksha Vishnu, but it's the form of the universe. And that form of the universe is what Brahma sees as he meditates on Garbhadaksha Vishnu, so that when he wakes up, does his sadhana and then does his seva, like we do. And his seva is he reconstructs the universe according to the plan, the blueprint, and he does his engineering work. According to the architectural plan of Vishnu. Okay, this is what it's supposed to look like. Okay. And he has all the potency and has all the intelligence and has everything. And off he goes. He does that every day for his whole life. And Krishna is the source of all of that. And the one who gives Varuna the ability to do what Varuna does comes from Krishna also. You remember when we discussed the Brahma's prayers, one of Brahma's prayers to Krishna after the stealing the calves and cows and seeing what he saw. His prayers, one of his prayers, says, because the residents in Vrindavan have such love for you, their spiritual forms can directly experience your lotus feet. And we, the demigods who are controllers of the senses, they're not the controllers of the residents of Braja because they have spiritual forms. But we have the benediction from them that we can also experience the sweetness of your lotus feet. So their function, outside of Vrindavan, there's senses and there's demigods in control, in charge of the senses. And those demigods that are in charge of the senses, that allow the senses to do what senses can do, and if they withdraw the power, then the senses can't do, because it requires the empowerment of the demigods. But the demigods get their power from Krishna, or forms of Krishna. Remember that discussion? It's a cause and effect machine, yantra machine. Yantra Rudhani Mayaya, language of Bhagavad Gita. This material world is a machine made of prakriti, material nature. And living entities are being carried by that machine, like you're carried by your car. Get in your car and zoom, zoom. 60 miles an hour. You're sitting there, moving at 60 miles an hour, whatever the speed is. But you're just sitting there. So as we're being moved by the automobile, similarly, prakriti is moving the living entity from this situation to that situation to the other situation, and it's happening through the movements of time overseen by the demigods, and time and the demigods receive their power from the source of everything. So now, how do you prove that? Well, you can't prove that. You can't disprove it either. It's the nature of transcendence. You can't use material tools to prove transcendence, nor can material tools disprove transcendence. So how do you verify if it is true or not? How do you verify anything? I know some people, they started becoming existentialists. you know, in part by reading existential literature, Camus and people like that. But they were like frustrated, and he was a frustrated fellow. So he came up with this idea, you can't know anything. You can't know anything. What do you know? One thing I know is I don't know anything. You can't verify anything other than, you know, I exist. So I exist. That's an existentialist. It's very frustrating. It's born of frustration. Exactly as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. Camus ended his life by driving his car off a highway, off a cliff and somewhere in France. Because, you know, there's no meaning to life. There's no meaning. Life has no meaning. It just exists. So what? Remember in high school, I studied French in high school. So one of the assignments was to read, The Stranger in French. And I was, you know, very frustrated man. And he committed a crime, committed a murder, and he got caught for the murder. He got sentenced to death, and he was like, it doesn't matter. Kill, don't kill, get killed, don't get killed. Nothing matters. Very sad man. And, you know, people that, intellectuals that say you can't prove anything. So, you know, what can you know? You can't know anything. Nothing matters. Mode of ignorance. So how do we know transcendence exists? What's the means of knowing anything? Ask Jiva Goswami. He'll tell you. There's, in the Vedic wisdom, there's standard means of knowing things. Prabhupada gave us 3. Jiva Goswami expands it to 10. It's just subdivisions of the 3. But sense perception, reason, and shabda, sound. From authority, you hear. That's how you can know. If you you want to go the first two, it's imperfect and it's never conclusive, and you can become an existentialist if you like. Or you can become a scientist, and then another scientist comes along and disproves what was proved previously and has another idea, and so on. It's endlessly transforming. Endlessly. Not we're getting closer. It's endlessly transforming. Never conclusive. So then, shabda. That's how you can know. And if you don't have faith in shabda, then you're left with the other two. You're left with not knowing. Or you can, you know, bluff and say, I know. Or you can be honest and say, I'm not sure. Or somewhere in between. So, this is Srimad Bhagavatam giving us shabda. Apurusheya shabda. So we're happy with that. And it's very happy. The practical result is not frustration. The practical result is spiritual happiness. And gradually understanding who we are, as opposed to living a life of who we're not. Trying to find happiness in a dream. And then our acharyas are connected to that transcendence, and they can help us understand the reality through their nice explanations. And Krishna's having fun. He's having a pastime to give his association to Varuna, to help the residents of Vrindavan feel protected, to display his divinity, at the same time enjoying sweetness. Fantastic. Let's see if there's some discussion. Anyone here want to participate? Otherwise, we'll go to the online ones. Soon as there are some online ones. Are there any online ones? Just one? Okay, we'll do that.
So this question is from Govinda Mohini Mataji. She was asking, there are predominating deities of senses, so we need sanction of these demigods as well as Krishna for them to function properly.
Yes.
Is it correct understanding?
Yes, yes. But, yeah, yeah. They derive their power. It's not like Krishna is micromanaging. They derive their power from Krishna and they do what Krishna wants with the power that Krishna gives them.
And then Visalaksha Prabhu asks, cowherds crying as Nanda was drawn in Yamuna. So we have drawn in material ocean, even though the holy name with me to rescue. So steps to aspire to cry from the heart to chant the holy name of Krishna. So he's asking for steps.
Asking for?
Steps to cry from the heart to chant the holy name of Krishna.
Well, if you have attachment to Krishna, then you will. And if you don't, you won't. So come to the stage of attachment. And the stage of attachment is very elevated. So don't imitate elevated when you're not elevated. But you, just so it's this step by step, become anartha nivritti and then the removal of impurities of the heart. Start there so that you can cry from the heart.
These are two questions from yesterday. Udayananda Prabhu was asking, after knowing that it's Nanda Maharaj who has been brought to Varunadeva's abode instead of bringing Nanda Maharaj back to Vrindavan, why did Varunadeva wait for Krishna to come? Why was Varuna waiting for Krishna to come instead of Varuna bringing Nanda Maharaj back to Vrindavan and leaving him?
I think you have to ask Varuna.
Yeah, this was Paramatma Prabhu asking a question from yesterday evening.
Hmm.
When we hear these pastimes of Prahlad Maharaj, it is very inspiring that one may want to become a pure devotee, but at the same time, fearful of typical tests put by the Lord.
Okay.
So, he was asking for a comment.
Right on, brother. We're conditioned. And we're conditioned by a bodily conception, and so there's fear. And so we're put in difficult situations, we feel fear. It's just, we're conditioned. We don't feel fearless because we're not pure. We're feeling fear. So the remedy is go beyond the bodily conception and recognize there is a protector who is all powerful, so we don't need to be fearful. We're not there yet.
And there are two questions from Radha Kunjibihari Prabhu. For each material universe, there is a Lord Brahma who is the secondary creator. From this, we infer there is a secondary creator for each of the planets in the spiritual world?
No.
The second one, when total annihilation...
Because the spiritual planets are not created. They're not a creator of spiritual planets. They're eternal.
And second one, when total annihilation happens, are all the expansions of Supreme Lord Krishna withdrawn? Is the spiritual world also withdrawn along with the material world?
Gosh, that's an interesting speculation. How can the spiritual world, which is eternal, be withdrawn? Why even come up with an idea like that? The material manifestation is temporary. The spiritual manifestation is not temporary.
Uh, And question from Uttama Bhakta Prabhu. Srila Prabhupada, what Srila Prabhupada has given us is gold. Sometimes I feel gold needs to be just visible and people will come looking for it. Where am I wrong in my thinking?
Well, if they value gold, then they'll come looking for it. But some people don't know what's gold. And they don't value it. So, Uttam Bhakta, you know, think of the Sanatan Goswami's touchstone. And the Brahmin that wanted, he asked for the touchstone and Sanatan Goswami gave it. Very liberally, it's over there in the garbage pile. And it worked. The touchstone turned base metal into gold, and he thought, wow, why is he just like keeping it in the garbage pile? He's got something more valuable. But people don't see something more valuable than the touchstone. And so to see that which is gold, you have to have the eyes to see that which is gold, or have faith in Sanatan Goswami type people that what they're doing is better than the material. And that's not so common. It's not just in modern times. According to what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, most people don't want that. They want the temporary. That's why we're in the material world. We want the temporary.
Kirti Prabhu is asking, cowherd men called out, O Krishna, O Rama. Were they addressing Narayana or were they addressing sons of Nanda?
Sons of Nanda. That's all they know. I mean, Nanda has as his worshipable deity Narayana. But others, it's just, of course, he has affection for Krishna also, but the worshipable deity is specifically. Anyway, this is a long discussion, but yeah, so he was calling his, they were calling Krishna and Rama. It's mentioned specifically in the commentary. That's it?
That's all the questions.
Okay. Yeah. You have to push the button. Oh, got it. Okay.
So my question is regarding the Shabda Praman. When we hear from the authority, we have the faith that that person has realized. And some people they come in contact with the people who have different realization, and they get guidance from there.
Yes.
And we, as a devotee, I came in contact with devotees and got guidance from there. So how to verify as if a newcomer comes, how one would verify which one is right?
Okay, that's a good question. Disciplic succession. And that in disciplic succession, there's no deviation of the message. I'll say two things in that response. Cause I'm used to this with, Western people that have a Christian upbringing. Long story short, because of time, in Gita Nagari, there's a gentleman in that community that's a Mormon. And the Mormons have this policy. Young people, for 2 years, they go out and do the Mormon faith-building program door-to-door. You know, pairs of two boys, two girls. And if they do that, they get their full college tuition taken care of by the Mormon church. Good program. You know, they're young and energetic and, you know, and so forth. So, every year a group of them go to some place near Gita Nagari And then this elder in the Mormon church brings them to Gitanagari to experience Gitanagari. Not like as part of what they do, experience the world. So I was with some of those young people, and shared with them when I grew up in upstate New York. My family, all of us, we went to attend the Mormon pageant, which is in the western part of New York State. It's in Palmyra, and it's the place where Joseph Smith got teachings from God, you know, went up on a hill. And so they have this whole outdoor big, you know, thousands of people parked in their cars hearing the enactment of Joseph Smith getting instruction from God. So they went, oh, you've been there. What was it like? And da-da-da. So, you know, there was a connect, like, you know, acceptance of their tradition. And so then I asked a question, do you have any idea that the teaching that you're hearing today are the same teachings that Joseph Smith had received so long ago? Just ask the open-ended question. I wasn't challenging. I just said, you know, is there some way to verify it hasn't changed over the, because you know how things change over time, right? So he said, well, you know, the elders in Salt Lake, you know, they're preserving the teachings intact. I said, okay. But have you gone through the trouble of seeing that what they're saying is what the previous generation said, what the previous generation said, what the previous generation said, which goes back to what Joseph Smith said? He said, well, no, we just trust those elders. I said, I recommend, you don't have to do this, but go read the writings of generations and see if there's been any change from what Joseph Smith said. Because I've done that in my tradition. Without that disciplic succession, guaranteed over time it's going to change. Not maybe. So how do you know what you're receiving is what Joseph Smith received? I'm just, you know, in simple language, describing disciplic succession. And disciplic succession has going back to Krishna. Now there are disciplic successions that go back to Krishna or Ananta teaching the four Kumaras and so forth. The goddess of fortune teaching, giving the teachings to the Alvars. So there's tradition. And then it's done changing over time. And one can read in this Sampradaya. So is that intact with the people that you're hearing from? I mean, you're not challenge you. Have you, well, I just have faith in this person. Okay, great. And where's the person getting his knowledge from, and where's that person getting his, and is it not changing over time? Go through the exercise and see, does it go back to the infallible supreme? Apurusheya Shabda. That's how you verify. And you know, here it is in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4. Now, some people aren't going to care. They like who they like, and that's good enough. But you can, you know, you're not insulting them. You're just inviting them to do what Krishna says. Some people, you know, that's, you know, notional. It's interesting. I'm not going to do that. Then you can go to, you know, according to Panda Purana, there are four disciplic successions that are still intact today, and here they are. So is what you're hearing from one of those four that's still intact today just scriptural? And if you don't go to scriptural, then what do you... If that's satisfying for you, then fine. But knowledge comes from the Supreme. It comes in disciplic succession. And that's how you receive it. And Krishna says without that, the knowledge is lost. Somebody can be a good speaker. very eloquent and charismatic and so on. The history is filled with people like that. But this is what Krishna says. Sipthic succession is imperative. You're not, you know, insulting them or confronting them. You're just explaining. This is the system. This is how you verify. What you're getting is the real deal. Yeah. Does that help? Okay, we're going to end. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.